2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we are talking financial literacy. And how well do we understand finances? Joining me today is Robin Scribner. You are the Assistant Director of Utah Women and Leadership Project at Utah Valley University. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thanks so much for having me.
Robin, I do want to go into this. Across the board, across the world, men and women are failing finances.
Absolutely.
That only 35% of men can answer basic. We're talking, there are five basic questions that a lot of tests will give you. Like, if you borrow $100, what is more if you pay $105 at the end of the term or 3% of that $100? And only 35% of men can get that question right.
Wow.
It's worse for women. It's only 30%. Which doesn't seem that far off from 35, but it is still below. Why aren't both men and women at 35%? What gives?
Oh, that's a great question. And this is something I hear people talking about this all the time, especially parents who are looking at their own kids who are coming of age and trying to learn how to become independent. And they're like, why have my students learned this obscure algebra and they don't know how to manage a credit card? And so this question of financial literacy, I think, is really widespread. And one of the things that we know from looking at women here in Utah, across the country, and even worldwide, is that for generations, even centuries, women weren't thought to need to know about money. And so this hasn't been part of our tradition, part of our culture of making sure that girls and women have the same financial education that boys and men have. But we know that it's absolutely critical, and it's really important that we make up this gap.
And especially now, with everything is digitized.
Right.
It's all in the web. It's just this, I think nowadays it's a foreign concept completely, because nobody's handling the money. Nobody feels that pain when you hand over a green dollar bill or your quarters, your hard-earned quarters, from back in the day. It's just, oh, you just swipe something, and then later on I just send money on the net, that nobody sees it. And that's why even men are challenged to understand financial literacy. But it is still even worse for women. And so how can we address that?
Well, there are lots of things that we can do to start talking about it. But one of them, I think, is just recognizing that historical context. You remember that movie On the Basis of Sex? Did you see that?
I did not see
that. Oh, it's amazing. But she talks, I mean, it illustrates the fact that as recently as the 1970s, it was legal for companies to deny women credit cards, to not give them home loans unless they were co-signing with a man. And so this is relatively recent that even our institutions have recognized, oh, women do need to learn about money and they need to be financially responsible and literate.
Yeah. In my lifetime, my mother was fired for being pregnant.
Oh,
I mean, this
oh, dear.
Is
right. There's yeah. So I mean, and it's widespread, these issues of looking at what it means for women to be full participants in the public sphere. Right. Because for so many years, women were in the private sphere and men were in the public sphere. But it actually starts with our little children. So the way we talk to our kids at very young ages, we teach our boys and girls about money differently. And one of the ways we do this is through the chores that we give them. Research has shown that we give girls chores that are inside the home, part of the the regular everyday work of the home. And we just say, well, that's what you do of being part of this family, right? But we give boys chores and they're like mowing the lawn outside, these heavier physical jobs. And they go, well, that's something you get paid for. And so girls are taught from a very young age, my work isn't worth as much. Maybe it's not valuable. Maybe it's not worth money. We can start by teaching boys and girls from the youngest ages to understand money by valuing the work that they do.
And I've heard that even if the parents are making sure that the boys clean the bathrooms or unload the dishwasher the same as the girls, they'll pay the boy and not the girl.
Absolutely.
Or even if they pay both, like I said, it's 50 cents if the girl does the dishwasher and a dollar if the boy does.
Right. And parents aren't trying to be unfair. It's just part of our unconscious bias, the way that we see and experience the world. That's why it's so important for us to have these kinds of conversations so we can really bring these issues out into the light, talk about them, and we can be more deliberate in the choices that we're making. But this start from the very beginning with our kids when they're children. This follows a woman throughout her entire life. So we can look at many stages in a woman's life cycle and the economic disadvantages that she has at many different stages because of this lack of basic financial literacy.
Let's say I, as a parent, I start paying my kids. I have a boy and a girl, and I start paying them exactly the same for their chores. I try to help them the best I can with my limited knowledge coming up from my generation about not getting into credit card debt. Once they themselves get out into the real world, how does that financial gap widen even when they become adults?
Well, there are a lot of ways. I mean, some of the things that we've learned by the way girls are socialized differently from boys in terms of risk taking is that girls will be more hesitant to invest their money in different ways. And boys will be like, oh, there's a bigger opportunity for return. So talking to them about saving money, earning money, and even investing money is really important to give them an equal footing in making some of these decisions that are really going to be fundamental to their financial well-being throughout their entire lives. One of the things that we know that girls face a little bit older as they become young adults is college debt. And 2/3 of the total student debt in the United States is held by women. So part of that is because women actually make up a higher percentage of students in our higher education, but also because women aren't making as much money when they leave college. These other things, women in the nation hold $900 billion of student loan debt. So, I mean, that's a serious number. They hold a higher percentage. And because they're economically disadvantaged in other ways, that burden is even going to be heavier on them. So that's kind of the next stage in the life cycle where we need to make sure our young women, when they're learning about college, they understand how student debt works. They're making smart choices, not taking on too much, and understanding that the way we pay off that debt is by getting good, high-paying jobs when we leave school.
Okay, but I want to go back to, I understand that there are more women in college right now, but are the boys maybe being taught, or more of them are being taught, maybe you do not want this debt when you get out of college, versus the women like, well, you don't have much of a choice. You're going to have to take on the debt because they don't have as much opportunity to scholarships, maybe? I mean, why would more women be taking on the debt than the men?
That's a great question. I think part of it, this happens a lot in the state of Utah, and that's really shifting. But traditionally, we haven't taught our girls as much about how important it is for them to go to college. So maybe they haven't looked into the scholarships, the grants, the other opportunities that are available for them. And it's all part of the big picture of the lower levels of financial literacy. And so if we're having better conversations, helping them understand better, maybe letting them know it's okay to work a part-time job. But I think it's complicated. I do think that when they come out and make less money, that has a lot to do with it because it's their outstanding debt over time.
Right.
And the less money you're making, the longer it's going to take for you to pay off
and
your loan.
A friend of mine just posted on Facebook recently. He said, am I the only one that knows you have to pay back your debt when you get out of college?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, they're just saying, oh, you get a loan for college, but nobody explains to them what happens after, whether it's boys or girls. But I'm guessing girls, because we don't even teach them as much about finances, they get even less knowledge that if you take out a loan, you have to pay it back.
Yes. And if students don't have the parental support, the educational support from counselors and other administrators at their schools, there really are some pieces that are missing. I filled out the FAFSA for the first time for my daughter a couple of years ago, and I filled out the whole thing, and it said, congratulations, you're eligible for this student aid. It was a loan. And if I didn't have a little bit of economic knowledge and recognize, oh, that's not a grant, that's something we have to pay back when we're done, I think a lot of parents even don't have the education they need to understand this is how it all works. And so just because it's available to me doesn't mean I need to accept it. So those are some of the issues.
Wow. Ooh, I like that. Okay, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go a little bit more into the financial literacy gap between men and women, or boys and girls. And by the way, this is for International Day of the Girl.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that if it affects your life in any way whatsoever, we're talking about it. And today it's about financial literacy. And we're sort of targeting this to women and girls. And that is because it's International Day of the Girl. So joining me today is Robin Scribner. You are with Utah Valley University. Tell us your title there.
So I'm the assistant director of the Utah Women in Leadership Project.
You deal a lot with women and their issues and what's going on.
That's all we do. We do a ton of research and we create resources and have events, all with the mission of strengthening the impact of Utah girls and women.
In that last segment, right at the end, you just said that you recently applied for FAFSA, F-A-F-S-A.
Correct.
Frank Alpha, Frank Sierra Alpha.
It is a tricky one to pronounce, that is,
yes.
Right?
But that is a program that helps you find financial aid for students, whether it's for you or for your children.
Yeah.
But no one has ever told me, because I have always assumed all these years that FAFSA comes back with grant or scholarship information, and it may.
Right.
It may say,
it absolutely can.
You qualify to apply for this scholarship or this grant. But it also will give you a loan?
Yeah, so it's specifically federal. It's the form that you fill out for any sort of federal aid that you can get for higher education. And it's recently become required for anybody to fill out whether or not they're eligible for financial aid to get any scholarships at schools. Schools really use it to see where people are in terms of their ability to pay for school. And so the most common form of federal aid that people think of is the Pell Grant, which is a grant that comes to you. You don't have to repay it. It's just money that you can use to pay for school for families that need it. But it also will notify you that you're eligible for federal student loans, which do need to be repaid. But that information comes directly to you and says, this is the aid you're eligible for. And so if you're not ready and really savvy about it, you can go, oh, I got this money, I'm going to go for it. And there's a possibility that some people might be missing some of those pieces.
Yeah, that would have been me. If I had been applying for that either for myself or for my children, I would have gone, oh, yes, I accept. Until I'm into the process, all of a sudden I realize, oops, we all have to pay this back.
Yes, this is something different than what I was expecting. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's important to know because I actually didn't know that till you just said that. So thank you for telling us about that. But I also wanted to go from there. I was looking at an opinion piece from a father who says he talks about finances differently with his daughter than he does with his sons. And at first I thought, oh, this is bad. You should be teaching your kids the same about finances. How dare you? However, as I read into the article, I really liked it because basically the father says, never let a man take over your financial life.
That's so important. One of the issues that we see a lot when we're working with women's issues across the state, that's actually one of the key issues that comes into play when we're looking at domestic violence. One of the reasons why women are trapped in relationships that are bad and even dangerous for them is because they don't have any financial recourse. One of the forms of domestic abuse is financial abuse, controlling all of a woman's finances so she has no ability to be financially independent.
Right. So if you had limited knowledge about finances going into a marriage, and then the husband goes, oh, don't worry about it, honey.
Right.
that's the worst.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry about that, honey. No matter if it's from a husband, your parents, or a boss, or, you know, oh, you don't need to worry about that, honey. We have financial advisors. We have this. They'll take care of you.
Absolutely. That puts women in an extremely vulnerable position. And it's important for girls from the youngest of ages, but certainly in young adulthood and through their adult years, for them to be knowledgeable about all the ways that their choices affect their financial well-being.
Yes, and understanding a credit card, or even not even a credit card. People don't use checks so much anymore, but I always heard this and it was a horror story. And unfortunately, with older women, especially if their husbands have died, mm-hmm. I still hear this from some of the older generation, women in their 70s or 80s. And they think that if they still have checks left in the checkbook, that means they have money available. Like each check.
Right. Was worth a certain value, right?
Right. So if I write a check for $100, it must mean I have $100 in the checking account.
Oh, my goodness. And that is terrifying.
Yeah. If you don't even have that basic knowledge, and nowadays, like I said, you don't even see the money. It's just a swipe. If you aren't taking a look at your bank account every single day, or at least once a week minimum. I mean, I may be anal retentive. I'm like every day
into
my bank account.
Right? Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, okay, what came through now? Or I make sure that what I purchased has gone through.
Right.
I don't want a surprise 3 weeks down the road when I think it has come through. And so
I make a different purchase.
And then this other charge came through that I thought might have done 3 weeks ago. Now it comes through and now I'm overdrawn.
Right. And now and then we even find something that came through twice, right? I've certainly seen that on my credit card.
I'm like,
I didn't buy that exact $49.27 two different times.
Right.
That was your mistake.
Oh, yeah.
So there are a lot of really important reasons to be checking those day-to-day things. But a bigger piece of the puzzle is also the long-term issues. And that's also where so many women, especially here in the state of Utah, fall short, because so many of us are working part-time, not full-time, although we are in the labor force and we are working, but we're working lower-paying jobs. I was reading a report from the YWCA Utah that they send out every year about the state of women, their overall well-being. And one of the numbers that stuck out to me was that 42% of women over the age of 65 in Utah receive 100% of their income from Social Security. Do you know how much the average Social Security check is?
Yeah, it's like $1,200.
It's extremely low. And so we have 42% of our senior women are living on a very, very low fixed income. And part of that is because they haven't had the financial literacy, the financial education, and the financial opportunities throughout their whole lives. And that puts them in a very vulnerable position in their old age.
Yeah, so if they didn't set up a retirement account, even if they were just working part-time, you can still take part of that part-time money, the funds coming in, and set up your own IRA.
Even if you're not working, you can.
Well, yes.
Yeah, a woman who's not working can also contribute. If she's married to a spouse that is working, she can contribute to an IRA.
And, you know, I am not opposed to, okay, one person make sure that the bills are managed and is writing the checks or credit card or whatever it is you're
responsibilities,
doing.
Right.
But I always recommend you need to sit down with your spouse once a week, have like a money date night.
For sure.
And it just means, hey, let's go through. What did you purchase this week? Let's look at our finances. And then one of them says, okay, I'm paying this amount on, I would hope that everybody's paying the full amount of their credit card statement every month. But if they can't, just be like, okay, we're paying this amount. That means going forward, you got to limit. Since I didn't pay off the whole bill this month, we're not going to put on more and max it out.
Right. So we're looking at the short-term goals regularly in regular conversations. And then we're looking at our long-term goals. What do we want to achieve? What are we saving for? How are we investing?
Right.
Those kind of conversations are so important for both partners to be participating
Because then
in.
If one or the other passes away, then you aren't like, well, where do we keep everything?
Right.
How do I pay this? How much? I didn't know we had that much on our credit card. Like, you know, and you start getting these statements and it's overwhelming just to lose a spouse, whether it's divorce or death, whatever the case is. That is overwhelming in itself. And now you have to learn a whole new skill.
Right. And, you know, I'm so guilty of this in the opposite direction. I've always managed all of our finances. And I say all the time, if I die, my husband needs to call my sister because she will know. She will understand where everything thing is, because he's really clueless, and that's something we need to work on to make sure that both of us, and even our children, when we're talking about our sons and daughters, making sure that they're involved in big picture conversations so they know when I tell my kid, I don't want to buy that thing, it's not because I don't literally have $6, but it's not how I want to spend my money. And we can help our kids start understanding the value of money and how we want to use it from very early ages.
When you say very early, are you talking when they're 6 months old?
Maybe like 3 years old, two or three. As soon as they get to a store and start asking for something, start looking at things, yeah. We can say, do you know, that's not how I want to spend my money. They can understand those concepts really early.
Wow. Usually it's like, no, you don't need that. I like that. It's, no, that's not how I want to spend my money.
And, you know, I think that's a great way to frame it. I don't want to throw my mom under the bus or anything. But when I was young, she would always say, we can't afford that. And so I grew up thinking we were destitute. You know, we can't afford a pair of jeans. We can't afford a pizza. And what she meant was, that's not how I want to spend my money. And so I think that's a better way to help children not feel terrified, like, oh, yes, we really can't afford a pizza, but we're saving for a big trip, or we want to go to Lagoon next summer, and so we're not going to eat out as much.
Yeah, because that is a big thing. I think this is a major conversation that needs to be had for both sexes, not just girls. When I was growing up, it's, oh, we can't afford that. And you do. You grow up with the idea that you are poor, that you are the lowest of the low. And that may have been at certain points in our life going, looking back, I think we really were. But when we got past that poor stage, I still heard that.
Yes.
And I think you're right. What my mother meant, or my stepfather meant, was that's not how we want to spend our money. But no, we can't afford that.
Right. It can make kids feel really uncertain. And so I think giving them a big picture, understanding the things that you're working for, your goals as a family, without putting them in this constant state of terror, we're, you know, one step away from losing our house or whatever.
Yeah, you never, never want to scare your kids about the money. You just want to make them feel secure that, you know, they aren't going to lose their home, but also make them understand how, in a broad sense, how the budget is going to work.
Right. And that household. We do always need to be making really deliberate choices to manage our finances, or else we do end up in a dire situation. And I think helping kids understand, oh, if I get this, I don't get this. And it's all about choosing and prioritizing.
Oh, I love that. Okay. We need to take one more break. When we come back, we want to talk about more ways we can help our children, especially the girls, be financially literate. And we'll be right back with Robin Scribner, the Assistant Director with Utah Women and Leadership Project at Utah Valley University. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money, because if it affects your life in any way whatsoever, we talk about it. And today it's financial literacy, especially for girls. And that is in honor of International Day of the Girl. And joining me with this conversation is Robin Scribner. You are with the Utah Valley University.
Yep.
So welcome back.
Thank you so much.
So I do want to talk about, if I'm a parent that didn't have a lot of financial literacy myself growing up, and I'm just sort of barely coping with the finances I have to deal with, I'm not necessarily poor, but it's just a hard, it's like I struggle with it, and I don't feel like I can talk to my kids about it, so I kind of don't.
Like, yeah.
Where are kids supposed to get this knowledge from if the parents aren't giving it to them?
Well, that's tough. And the parents can't ever give up their responsibility entirely. But one of the things that's exciting in the state of Utah is that we are one of the few states that requires financial literacy education in our high schools for all our high school graduates. And actually, an organization recently ranked all the states in the country, and Utah was only one of only five states that received the A grade for their own financial literacy. I've had a few kids take this class. It is pretty basic, but it covers a lot of the major issues that they need to be looking at. And so I'm so grateful to know that if I haven't touched on some of these things yet, that they're getting a background when they're in high school.
Yeah, I did an episode on Money Making Sense, the teen financial literacy, and I actually gave a group of teenagers one of these tests. And one of them, she was 18 years older. She's just about to turn 18, I think. She hadn't taken her financial literacy class yet that, as you said, is required in all Utah high schools or schools. Mm-hmm. And she thought she knew her stuff. She actually had a part-time job, and the boss like just deposited all the money on a debit card that they could just use. So they don't even get paycheck stubs anymore.
Oh my goodness.
They get it on a debit card. But she thought she was pretty hot stuff and knew everything. And she had the worst score of everybody on this test.
So an eye-opener for her.
It was an eye-opener for her. She was a little bit in tears, but she was very humbled by it. And I felt very bad for her. I mean, we've all been there. Oh, I know this,
right?
Blah, blah, no problem. And she realized, oh my gosh, like she didn't understand about interest.
Right.
And here she has now mind you, it was a little bit different because it wasn't like a loan. It was, you know, money was put onto a debit card for her. But she sort of thought that that is how all credit cards worked.
Oh, yeah.
We had a conversation afterwards to, you know, where she, you know, felt she knew stuff that she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't understand interest rates, that if you borrow $100, the bank doesn't just go, oh, here's $100, just pay us back $100.
Absolutely.
They charge interest month after month that you do not pay this off.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just putting down $10 or $15 every month toward this, it may take you a year or more to pay it off. And instead of just paying $100, you wind up paying about $170 back to the bank because they've charged you that much interest over the time it took you to pay it off.
Aren't those interest calculators always so terrifying when you see this one charge that I made at this point actually ends up costing me so much more than
right.
the original cost?
And that's why so many people advise you, if you do have a credit card and if you charge something on it and you get your statement at the end of the month, pay the entire thing off because you won't be paying interest.
Right.
If you do that.
Yeah, but credit cards can be a great resource, a great tool if you understand how to use them.
Right. The second you go one day past the due date, boom, mm-hmm. you not only are charged interest on it, but then they charge you a late fee.
Right.
Which is worse.
Right.
So you want to avoid late fees, but you also have to understand interest is just going to mount. And yeah.
And you said that girl was in tears, but what a better way for her to learn that lesson in an educational setting
yes.
rather than learning it where all of a sudden she's out $500 because she didn't understand how it works.
Yeah.
So and kudos to you for teaching that lesson.
Oh, thank you. And I talked to her mother after the fact. About 2 months later, she got into school and took her financial literacy course.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt so much better about the whole thing. Because she came in realizing she didn't know it all.
Oh, good.
And so her mom said that was a really good lesson for her.
Good.
As we wrap up this segment, what are the top three tips you would recommend? This is going to apply to everybody, but we are dedicating this to women because today is the International Day of the Girl. What are the top three tips you would recommend? This is going to apply to everybody, but we are dedicating this to women because today is the International Day of the Girl. So what are some of the top three tips you would recommend for women to start learning financial literacy and jump way up? Because right now, like we said at the start of the show, only 30% of women worldwide mm-hmm. could pass a very basic financial literacy exam.
So the three things that I would focus on, the first one is actually on us as parents or other influencers, is to really accept and understand the new world of economics for girls and women here in the state of Utah, nationally and globally, which is women can no longer think that they're not going to be working, that they're not going to have to manage their own money, that they're just going to always be under the protection or support of a man. It's really not going to happen. And so that's our first step, is to have the urgency to know how critically important this is for our girls and women to learn themselves. So the second thing is focusing on the day-to-day, teaching the basic skills, looking to our schools. Even if we are missing those basic financial skills, there are a million online classes that we can take for free to understand interest, saving, investing, all those other things. So to make sure we've got our own basic skills in place so we can teach those basic skills to our daughters. But the third one I would love to mention is how important it is to help our girls and women understand the role of investing in long-time financial well-being, because when we're looking at our long-term retirement, when we're looking at really wanting to grow wealth, I think investing is much trickier for girls and women because we're taught to not take risks. So many investments are a lot safer than even just having money in cash, right?
Right.
Or money in the bank, because it's not going to outpace inflation. So helping girls and women understand it's okay to learn about the risks and to take calculated risks. So that investment piece is something that's really missing for girls and women, and it's absolutely critical for their long-term financial well-being.
What do you say if it's your daughter or a young person and you're trying to pass on this knowledge to them and they go, oh, money is so boring? How do you respond to that?
Oh, I talk to my children about this all the time, because even though they might think money is boring, they don't think sweatshirts are boring. They don't think albums are boring. They don't think a trip to a concert is boring. So we talk about the things that they want, because all kids want things. And so we're always putting their desires in perspective with their ability to pay for it. So my kids start paying for stuff when they're very, very young, and they'll contribute. If we're going to Lagoon, we had this huge chart one year, and our kids all earned this money to pay for half of their ticket to Lagoon. And so we help them understand the relationship between the things that we want and how we're going to pay for it.
I love that. And that's why my tagline here for Money Making Sense is, if it affects your life in any way whatsoever, we're going to talk about it. Well, if somebody can tell me what way money doesn't affect your life, I'd love to hear it, because so far, no one has said anything to me about any portion of their life where money isn't a factor.
Oh, absolutely. It touches every aspect of our lives.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Robin Scribner. You are the Assistant Director of Utah Women in Leadership Project at Utah Valley University, also known as UVU,
right,
down in Utah County. So thank you so much for helping us understand how we can gain more financial literacy, especially for girls and women.
It was great being with you. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's H-K-E-L-L-Y at ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.